Interview with State Representative Bobby Hill, Savannah, Georgia, May 3rd, 1974.
What's your background? Did you grow up in Savannah?
No, Athens, in the Red Hill.
I'm not sure what that noise is. Try it and see how it goes. And then?
Went to high school up in Athens and came down here to go to school at Savannah State, finished there, and went up to Washington to Howard Law School.
And finished law school when?
66.
And then came back here to practice?
Yeah.
And when did you run for the legislature?
Practiced law in New York, yeah, with the Legal Defense Fund. 67, ran in 68.
And got elected that year. So you served 3 terms.
Right.
And were you involved in civil rights activity before you went to Howard?
Yeah. I was the youth field secretary or director or whatever they called it at the time for the NAACP. In 7 states, the 7 southern region was included, up to as far as North Carolina. And,
what were the 7 states?
Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Mississippi, Alabama. What's that?
Would you evaluate, you know, just your own view on the strength of the NAACP in those 7 states?
It was, at that time, we also had Tennessee, yeah. It was the only firmly organized group with a structure, with a serious filtering and process for information at that time. And the strength of the various chapters from city to city varied. Go up to Durham, you find a strong chapter. You go to Dyersburg, you'd find a weak chapter. You go to Savannah, had a strong chapter. Atlanta, strong chapter.
How about the statewide in those states?
The statewide organization was very loosely knit. It had a state conference of branches.
Right.
And there's no authority that much vested in the president of a state conference except to be a sort of a conduit for information coming from the various branches up to the national office. So there was no strength in that regard. I think it depended almost on every chapter. And it was, although it had, each chapter had its own way of going, I think what we learned was that there was a structure to respond, of course, to a given crisis. For example, in the Monroe-Covington social circle area, there was a very weak branch. But it was, when a crisis came, they had curfews enacted by the mayor and council.
What state was this?
This was in Georgia. This was up in Covington, Monroe, that area, Walton County. There was the NAACP, and then people gravitated to the NAACP because the structure existed, although it was very weak. And it was an excellent way to respond to the crisis which, when it developed. And that is sort of my analysis of it in terms of its strength. But it varied from city to city and from crisis to crisis. But it was always there to respond to civil rights interests of people who were in these communities.
Well, I know in South Carolina they were just by far they were the single statewide black organization for years.
Right.
And were very strong politically in South Carolina, even if the same people at least. I mean, they would switch hats and adjourn an AACP meeting and then convene the Clarendon County Citizens Committee meeting or whatever it might be for the legal purposes.
But I was worked extensively over in South Carolina. My experience there was that there was at least one example. South Carolina and Florida had the best, probably statewide organization, and that was personality oriented because I.D. Quincy Newman and Matt Perry held together a sort of a statewide organization. And Newman, of course, was the state field director and was doing such an excellent job with a state organization that it made sense. That did not exist in Tennessee. Tennessee, it was centered around Memphis because the strong people were in Memphis. So it did, was a good deal of difference in those two states.
How about in Florida?
Florida, as I suggested, also had a pretty strong statewide organization. Primarily because Father Gibson, again, personalities, the whole thing, was such a dominant figure and had the time to travel throughout the state. And that sort of made the difference in keeping together a state organization.
Now who is he?
Father Gibson.
Is he still active?
I don't know if he is or not. He had a big falling out with the NAACP, at least on one occasion. And, two branches, the branch in Jacksonville and the branch in Miami, were very strong. And they rose to sort of a statewide eminence. And they sort of, the presidents in those two cities purported to speak for the entire state. And it gave some semblance of a strong statewide organization. In fact, it worked out that way. I mean, when we had problems in Live Oak, Lake City, areas like that, the president from Jacksonville of the branch and the president from Miami felt an obligation, did in fact go to those places to aid the tobacco pullers and so forth. So it did have a sort of pretty tightly knit.
When did you decide to run for the legislature?
Oh, let me see. I was up in New York in 67. And the local NAACP chapter realized that it was about time that the votes were getting right to elect blacks to the state legislature and the county commission. And they were looking for, they were on a candidate search sort of. I was one of the persons called upon. And the way it was sort of put to me was, needed somebody who was qualified and who had identities with the civil rights movement and who had been and who likewise had the appeal because the districts were going to come out black, maybe 60% black and 40% white at the time, so you had to have a candidate search. You almost had to package a candidate. When I came down, I was already intending to come back here to practice law. They knew that, so I came down, and I was sort of the choice of that group at the time.
It was basically the local NAACP group?
Well, it's a two-hat thing again. It was the NAACP Political Advisory Council, which is a separate organization. But again, it's a sort of a two-hat thing. The NAACP had to avoid politics, as it were, you know, for tax purposes. And so you had another organization headed by Attorney Gadsden, Eugene Gadsden, who is still, in fact, the head of it. And that's sort of the way it was done.
And what did you, had you been interested before that in running for office? I mean, was that any sort of
In the recesses of my mind, I'd always been interested in politics. Had always run for almost everything in schools and so forth. And so, as to identifying the particular office, no.
When you came back to Savannah, was that the time when the Republicans were really moving in strong here and winning offices?
I think that's right. I think that's right.
Well, what sort of Democratic Party is there now in Chatham County?
The party is a non-party. It's a party in name. It has no function whatsoever except to qualify the candidates. A lot of people who purport to be Democrats are very chagrined at that and sort of searching for something. I've had several people call me and say, why don't we firmly organize a party? But I want to be a Georgia Democrat syndrome, split the party up so bad that nobody wanted to be clearly identified with the party. You remember that, Aaron. Some of that's still around. They were really not knowing where they wanted to gravitate, whether they wanted to go to Republican. We had a lot of switchovers and so forth. So rather than be firmly identified with the party, that great majority of people say, I'm a Georgia Democrat. And so it sort of washed out any possibility of firm organization along Democratic Party lines.
Was that changing?
I don't think so. I think that the unpopularity of the Republican Party on the national level probably is changing that some, or at least it will. There's no firm evidence of it here now in terms of organization. It may be the mental attitude of a lot of people who are Democrats and to be a little more forthright in saying that they're Democrats, so to assure that they're not known as Republicans. But other than that, I don't think there's anything going on.
What sort of coalition is there here, political coalition, among Democrats?
I don't understand.
Well, all right, there was a Republican congressman here, right, a few years ago.
No, you had a Republican mayor.
I thought it was a Republican congressman here, too.
No, we had Elliot Hagan for 6 years down here.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't know why I was under that impression that there wasn't a Republican congressman.
He had a Republican mayor who made a lot of splash. First time in maybe 100 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Is there any sort of... Your district is what percent black?
99% now. It started off, I guess, 60-40 black, and fastly drifted to...
Were the boundaries changed or just the population shift?
Population shift. A recent boundary change probably put some more whites in the last reapportionment bill, which we just had approved, but probably put a couple thousand whites in it. We represent, we have in each district some 25,000 people. I think that's about right. And I don't know, I guess we put in the last reapportionment, we took in some parts of Garden City, which is pretty white. I don't know what the county is.
Do you see any change, or what changes do you see in the way white politicians in Georgia are relating to blacks?
Oh, it's a fantastic change since the time I was first elected. They are aware that blacks are registering and voting, and that blacks almost uniformly vote the same way. Now, that's not altogether true. And I think that won't prove true in the governor's race, for example. But at least whites think that blacks vote a solid block. In view of that thought, they seek out the black vote and respond to it. Sam Nunn, who ran a racist campaign for Senate, has got blacks on his staff, has sought out advice from the black community. Congressman Ginn, who's got a district that's 39% black, the first congressional district down here, has got blacks on his staff, seeks out advice, talks to black groups often.
How about his voting record?
His voting record is responsive in many, many ways to the needs of blacks. He voted, for example, for the minimum wage bill. He voted for the amendment to include the domestic workers in it. I think that he told me very recently in a letter that he would vote to extend the OEO program. So I think that that's really the thing we just said about him is probably the profile of all of these congressional representatives in Georgia now who've got significant blacks in their district.
Does that include none? Is none voting along those same lines?
No. None is going to have a peculiar record. Again, because he's running statewide, it's a little different. The blacks won't coalesce around him as fast. Also, he's trying to keep it's obvious what the kind of image he's trying to portray. He's trying to not depart company too far from the kind of campaign he ran, which was extremely racist. But I have a different kind of insight. I served with him for 4 years on the Judiciary Committee up in the House, and I know him personally, and I know him not to be what his public image would reflect, I'll put it that way. Not that that means anything when you go to the vote affecting people, but I think when the chips are down on an issue, I think we can count on
it. How do you feel about, a candidate like Nunn, who I assume on the basis of what you said, that he uses race as a political issue because he feels it's necessary. Is that correct?
Yeah.
How do you feel?
Well, that makes for a hypocrite, and it also makes for a sort of hypocritical kind of analysis which you have to give. And you know the guy personally, you know that you've had unstrained relationships with him. And I know that when we close the door and get in the smoke-filled room, that we can count on it. I know that to be a fact. And I also know that he's got to win. For us and so I understand that.
How about on an issue like the Voting Rights Act when it comes up for renewal next year? What do you think Georgia congressmen are going to do on that?
I think that if we take Bo Ginn's record, I think the reasonable indication is that he'll go with us. And if you take Sam, I'm sure he will equivocate. I think that we can expect his vote in the last analysis. I think he'll pop his gums about it and try to explain it away, but I think he'll vote.
Who's a congressman from the Augusta area?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to see them go in that direction.
From Athens, too, I think.
Would it? I just go to show you how detached I am from my old hometown. I don't know. Got it right.
The congressman from that district got a lot of mail from the black elected officials in his district. He's on the House Education Committee, subcommittee on the, I think it's bill to extend OEO.
Right.
And he wrote back a letter saying he was working to get it out of committee and would support it overwhelmingly. And this is a guy who in the past has sort of been a traditional conservative. Do you see black elected officials on the state level, in effect, serving a broker role between their black constituency and the congressional delegation?
Oh, no question about it. There is a structure to achieve that.
This is Gabriel.
The Black Caucus works very closely out of Washington, the Congressional Black Caucus, with our legislative black caucus in the state house.
What sort of relationship is there? How is it established?
It is established in that we have notified the congressional caucus that we
exist as a caucus of 14 members of the House, and that we welcome exchanging information as well as serving in that sort of, as you put it, a brokering function. If you've got something up there on the Hill where we can get the ball rolling on the grassroots level, then we'll do it. Typical is the thing you talked about. In fact, what we did on this end, right from here, for again, was to, I first wrote him a letter, rather definitively setting forth what I thought, setting forth what I thought he ought to vote to extend OEO through 77 under Augustus Hawkins resolution. And I also wrote the other black elected officials as well as people whom I thought were influential and asked them to write him. So it, but the impetus for that came from the Black Caucus. I had corresponded with Walt Fauntleroy. It worked that way.
So is and then so is there does the Black Elected Officials Association also have this relationship with the Congressional Black Caucus, or
I don't know.
But the Legislative Black Caucus would serve as, in effect, serve as liaison between the Black Elected Officials Association and the Congressional Black
Caucus.
Mm-hmm. Does it in fact do that?
Right.
Impression I have from talking to several people is that the Black Elected Officials Association of Black Elected Officials, is fairly effective.
I don't know. Or
has the potential to be fairly effective.
It's new. It sure has.
But the response I've gotten from people I've talked to who are members has been generally positive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just don't know. I have attended very few of the meetings because I've been so busy, but I know it has potential for being a real potent force.
Are there any others in the South that you know of on a statewide basis?
I don't know. You might ask Ben Brown that question. He told me, I guess, a couple of months ago that there was an effort afoot to establish something along this line in Mississippi and in Alabama. I'm fairly sure that it's already been established in Alabama. The problem with it was, in the other states, you didn't have that many black elected officials on the state house level.
Right.
Where it, you know, it carried a little more weight, and we did. We always had 9 or 10 here. So that's what made it easy.
But most of the other states now is growing because of single member districts.
Right.
And Louisiana went from 1 to 8, I think, in the House. And with 8, you've got a nucleus there.
That's right. In fact, I was down, I see how fast I forget, I went down to Louisiana, to New Orleans, to establish one for a crowd in Louisiana. Sure did. And they've got one.
So on the state level?
Yeah. Johnny Jones heads it up, I think, and a woman who's in the State House.
I know what you mean. I can't think of her name. She's both very effective. Louisiana just passed this new constitution. One of the strongest Bill of Rights you find in any state constitution in the country. Black state representative from Shreveport was chairman of that subcommittee on the Constitutional Convention.
Great.
Alphonse Jackson. Some guarantees a right of counsel. I mean, this sort of stuff is written into the state constitution. Do you detect any problem, or how serious a problem, of apathy among blacks in terms of voter registration and turnout?
Put that again.
Do you detect any problem of apathy among blacks generally in Georgia?
No more than among anybody else, that there's a apathetic throng which runs through everybody in reference to politics, probably now more than ever before. But I don't know that it is any more pronounced in the black community than anywhere else. General apathy is there.
Just more because of Watergate.
Watergate and
the non-productivity of the political folk.
This was the question, is there any sense of apathy that among people who, they registered and they voted and found nothing happened? And you're supposed to, it's sort of been a goal to get to, but suddenly once you're voted, things are supposed to change, and they just haven't felt that change in their personal lives and perceive it.
No, I don't think that. That day is not that far around the corner. I don't think it happened yet. I think why personal example is that my constituency does not expect any great change to be brought about because of my presence in the state legislature, because they know I'm in a great minority of them. And so they don't expect me to turn it around overnight. And so I think if you enlarge that kind of analysis, you get this result that nobody expected that it was going to be an overnight thing because they turned out to vote for them. And then, again, there were notable gains in that there were an increase in black elected officials, and there was an increase in the attention that black people got from white politicians. So that's a gain which is noticeable, although it may not affect one's housing conditions directly or the money in one's pocket. The blacks realize that, well, the guy who's running for mayor now comes down the outside of town, Chitlins or whatever, held being served, and then I think that, so that the kind of thing that you suggest in terms of an apathy born out of non-productivity, I don't think it's come. Now, I think it's around the corner, though, because the next level of appreciation for politics is, what am I getting out of it? You know, after you get used to the guy coming down to your community and you get used to having black elected officials, then you got to move on to some more substantive things, and then that's where the disappointment is going to come. But it's not there yet.
How about in terms of programmatic results in the legislature? What can you point to that has come about as a result of blacks being in the legislature in terms of substantive legislation as opposed to symbolic, things of symbolic significance?
In Georgia, where we've got 14 up there out of 180, I think that's right, or close. That's a pretty good block of votes. And the big gain great purpose we serve up there is that we're able to block legislation which negatively affects black people and poor people. Typical is a sales tax increase. Sales tax, most regressive, as you well know, of any kind. We can take almost single-handed credit for blocking the increase in the sales tax in the state. For the last 4 years, it's been tried, and they lose it time and time again by 8 votes. Now, we blocked the gasoline tax, which was a 1 cent kind of 2 cents on gasoline, which affects people who absolutely must use the car to get back and forth to work, and that's a big bite out of their small income. We passed Residential Finance Agency, which is a state Fannie Mae, which over the long haul will provide $100 million worth of financing for low-income families. That passed by like 3 or 4 votes. We've been able to clean up and stall, halt legislation, wild kinds of legislation which affect the criminal laws, much of which was designed to capture poor people and black people. And right in the Judiciary Committee, where three of us sit out of some 14 people, we've been able on many, many instances to keep legislation in a committee, which we felt on the Education Committee, where we are 6 of 30. We've been able to halt some of the teacher evaluation legislation, which was designed to wash out black teachers after integration. Some of the silly kind of busing legislation which has come up in the House. The castration for rape legislation we've been able to halt. So it's that kind of thing that I see as significant. We passed, for example, by a slim margin last term, a state OEO vetoed by the governor, albeit, which was extremely significant.
Why did he veto it?
Oh, he didn't have any reason. He just, I don't know.
How do you evaluate the governor?
I think he's been a good governor overall. I think he's been a poor politician in many instances. And it is frustrated. As a result, he's frustrated himself some of the things which he wanted to do and which I think could have been good, but to just mishandle them. So,
can you give any specific examples of how he, poor politics cost him something?
He had in his mind and told us as much that in his reorganization plan, for example, he wanted to overhaul the merit system to include, to assure that more blacks were in state government. Our situation with states, blacks in state government is pitiful. He sincerely wanted to do something about that. He's hampered by the state merit system. In an attempt to overhaul it, he asked all the people to sponsor the legislation. He sent kids up from the governor's office to politic for it. Unpolitic ways of dealing with.
Does he lack an effective legislative liaison representative from his office?
Oh, yeah. No question about it. He's,
does he have somebody designated for that job?
Until this year, he didn't. Found out how crucial it was. And even then, it was done with a great disavowal of that he was doing it. We all knew that who his man was and denied it. Just wasn't good politics. He committed many political errors. Had a kid to scribble a note from the governor's office and put it on everybody's desk, and he signed the governor's signature to it. We all knew it wasn't his signature. Little things like that just hurt him and hurt significant measures, which I had reason to believe that he sincerely wanted passed.
Has that been a big factor, just the fact that he has not had an effective person as liaison between his office and the legislature?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
How do you evaluate the role that Rita Samuels has played?
I don't think she has had, word is probably not authority. I don't think that her leash has been long enough. All right? I'll leave it at that.
Okay. How significant do you rate the hanging of the Martin Luther King portrait in the Capitol?
I guess it's symbolic of the government's recognition of Dr. King and his ideas, his cause. It's that kind of thing that I don't place any great credence in personally. I understand its worth. But you know, you're dead, you're done. And I just like to see when something substantive correspond to that. And the fear that I have is when you do something symbolic like that, that particularly when it's that, when it's Dr. King and it's that significant in the minds of black people, that it gives room to obscure significant gains. And you make such a splash of it. But, I mean, it's, you can't oppose it. You just have to add that that's not enough and that it's important for the moment. And that's it.
How much did Lester Maddox hurt or help himself politically with his attack on that?
I don't know.
How about among blacks?
I don't know. I hope he didn't have any strength among blacks at all anyway.
Well, there was that one poll taken in last fall and showed in Atlanta, showed him, you know, something like a 35% approval rating among blacks.
I don't believe that.
Head-to-head race with Gambrell getting about 25% of the vote.
I discount it. I don't believe it. Maybe my door is closed too often. You know? I believe it.
Well, the reason for whatever appeal he has been explained to us in terms of some blacks perceive Maddox at least being honest in his views. We think most other whites have the same views but don't express them. And two, that during his administration, more blacks were brought into state government than ever before.
Well,
I don't know.
That's what the educational system did. Segregated educational system, depriving black people of a decent education, skewered their perception. If Graham Jackson is meaningless to me as an abortive correction, a piano player from Peter Pat's porch. That wasn't significant at all. Graham Jackson was doing more for black folk than putting a cracker up there. So that's the kind of people he brought in. So it was insignificant that they were black to me, and it should have been to intelligent black folk. I'm sure that there's some people he could count up his people, and most of the people he brought in there were worthless in terms of being significant forces to help black folks. Now, that does not take away from the fact that that we have to recognize that there that percentage of people who think that was worthwhile and that they are going to vote for them. I think that if the story is told clearly and cleanly, then those people could be enlightened and they would back off any support that they might have for Lester. That's what I feel. So in light of having candidates in the race who I hope will articulate that at the proper time, and I think that will wash out any black support that he has, because it's got to be surface support. Lester is still Lester. Lester is still ignorant. So Lester can't run state government. I served in the legislature while Lester was up there. His notions about legislation were all wet. He never got them through the legislature. We had great fun and laughed at his legislation while it went down the drain. So it wasn't helping the state.
Why was there no black candidate in the governor's race this year?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
My question really was that any sort of a strategic decision, or is it something that just happened? Was it ever discussed as a?
No, we've arrived now. You know, we're not. Nobody speaks anymore. That was a tragedy, the only tragedy that Dr. King ever committed, you know.
I was speaking for all the black folk in America. Nobody speaks for black folk generally anymore. See that? Even when there was a black in the race for governor, that did not have the unanimous approval of all black folk when CB got in, and that was probably as fortunate in one direction as it was unfortunate in another, and that didn't require any tall explanation except that nobody has emerged who wanted to run, apparently, and nobody's running. We couldn't stop any black if he or she wanted to run, and there's no statewide organization to make those kinds of determinations.
Do you anticipate there may develop any, am I correct, there is nothing like a Democratic black caucus in Georgia?
No, I don't think there, I know that there's not such a thing now. I don't think that there is any serious possibility of that happening. And I say facetiously that we've arrived. What I mean is that blacks in differing communities are making their own decisions about what their politics are all about. What Savannah is Savannah and Atlanta is Atlanta. I've got some interests which differ distinctly from the blacks in Atlanta, and I pushed that particular cause. And if the candidate in the race is leaning toward those interests, which I think affect black people and my constituents, I could give a tinkler's damn what black folk in Atlanta think. I think the port is significant to the blacks down here. I'd turn to the candidate that's more interested in the port than a candidate that's more interested in a World Congress Center in Atlanta. And we'd go to head-to-head battle on that issue. So I think that kind of fragmentation is fresh, and it's round here to stay. It will only be by accident now that blacks all agree on the same candidate.
Well, I wasn't thinking so much of necessarily agreeing on the same candidate, but just meeting on some sort of basis in general policy matters and discussing politics in general. Would the Black Elected Officials Association be the nearest thing to a statewide black political organization?
Yeah, and it does that, and I think that some of the discussion which is now going on speaks of at least trying to draw out what issues we can have a common bond on.
What kind of issues are being discussed at the meetings? Yeah, I talked to McIntyre, and I didn't really ask him that question.
Well, I wish Ed would answer it, because he knows better, far better than I. You know, what we did back over in Augusta, I believe, we tried to set up an agenda which would address itself broadly to all of those issues affecting poor people and black people. You know, like housing, jobs, discrimination in state government, appointments into state posts and the like. And what I think was concluded was that we wanted to know from all candidates how they felt on these issues, significant issues. Because I don't think, that personally, that there's any one of the candidates who's ever going to get a lock on the black vote, because they're not saying that. What they're saying is just not that much different.
When there's no racial issue, blacks are going to split them on other issues. Is that
right,
basically
right,
it?
Right.
Just they vote like anybody else is going to vote.
Right, that's right.
I think that's sort of a pattern. The is there any active coalition between blacks and organized labor in the Savannah area and statewide?
Yeah, you don't hold me to this too closely. The problem is when you ask that question, I began to look at the Richter scale, I guess, to see how closely knit you would expect that. There's a traditional sort of alliance between blacks and labor. We've had, if nothing more,
good rapport with labor. And labor's interests, i.e. jobs and the like, i.e. Getting rid of right to work laws, has overlapped with the interests of black people. And that is also sort of accidental, because it's an interest, it's an issue-oriented thing. So it's not tightly knit, it's not a fixation. I mean, I don't think that blacks feel unalterably wedded somehow to labor, but that loosely knit kind of coalition is there, and we talk to each other and we discuss those things to the extent that I think that when chips are down, that the votes come out about the same way.